and over try to overemphasize the details and figure things out. In fact, I haven't really gone through it. I've held on to it, Milton, the little pamphlet you gave me that was mailed out from, I forget the dear man's name, bless his heart, that sends out these pamphlets now and then. And this is all about how Jesus is coming back before 2033, before April of 2033. I haven't gone through his figures yet. Yeah, I probably will if I'm bored sometime. We can take prophecy the wrong direction real fast and quick. So I want to be sure we have a good foundation for what we're doing before we actually look at what does the Bible say about the rapture, what does the Bible say about the tribulation, so on. So tonight I want to look at this a little bit look at the question of why is prophecy confusing? And pardon me for one second. I have a little logistical thing. Cameron, my screen in the back has a little recording symbol. And it says zero. Oh, that just started. Okay. So it had started a little late. I want to be sure that was going. why is prophecy so confusing? Combined, condensed, and confusing. I'm going to suggest there's five areas. There's five reasons prophecy can be very confusing in Scripture. And again, you're welcome to interact a little more than usual for Sunday morning, at least. Others might give a little different list or different breakdown, but here we go. Prophecy combines things sometimes in unusual ways. It summarizes. It doesn't always give all the details. It like brings different parts of an event together and it skips gaps of time, so it gives summaries sometimes. It uses a lot of symbolism, and that's often seen as the most confusing part. The reason it's so confusing, and that is part of it. But that's not all of it. Symbolism makes sense that when it's used, and when we can't figure it out, it's okay. But symbolism means something. It's not just a random figure out what it think it means and run with it. Assign your own value to the symbol, and then you can just run. Symbols are not random. They're not arbitrary. There's incomplete information. We looked at that a few weeks ago. God's point in giving prophecy is not to just give us all the details. And some details are left out. It's kind of like a puzzle with no box top and at least a quarter of the pieces missing. And maybe half the pieces missing. And you can put the pieces together and think they fit this way. And somebody else says, no, I think they fit this way. And you don't have a box top to compare it to. So it's incomplete information if we're looking at details of events. And then I firmly believe that prophecy is clarified when it's fulfilled. When prophecy is fulfilled, then suddenly it makes sense. You get it then. Beforehand, you're guessing to some extent. Educated guesses. Putting things together as best you can. Some things in Christianity you hold tightly. You hold a closed fist. And I forget where I picked up that phrase. It's not original with me. Some things you hold closed fist. Deity of Christ, virgin birth, salvation by faith alone. That's closed fist stuff. We're not going to let go of that. Some things you hold with an open hand. All right. This is what I think. If I'm wrong, it's not going to bother me. It's okay. This is where I was. So prophecy is an open hand type of hold on it. So does that make sense? Prophecy is confusing for these five reasons. Let's talk about combination first. This is one that throws people quite a bit. We understand that history contains parallels. And maybe one of the most obvious things we understand that with is the sacrifices from the Old Testament. And that's supposed to be an altar. I don't know if it's recognizable or not. Symbolizes the death of Christ. So we have this acted parallel. An acted object lesson, if you will. So history contains parallels. God's built parallels into history to teach us things. Sometimes those parallels are clearly laid out and called types. It's a type of Christ, so on. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're less clear. We all read in the Christmas story with Joseph and Mary and Jesus going to Egypt and then coming back from Egypt. And Matthew says they returned from Egypt. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. The problem with that, what causes the issues with that statement is that was not a prophecy. That was a statement in Hosea 11. God says, when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. That's actually a statement about Israel that Matthew takes and applies to Christ and uses the term fulfilled with it. So fulfilled, that doesn't mean prophecy, this is going to happen, and it happens. It means there's symbolism, there's parallel that is made clear, that the meaning, the real value of that event is brought out later. Fulfilled in the sense of, if you will, filled full of meaning. Okay? There's parallel, and that's just one of the parallels of events in history. Does that make sense? God's built parallels into history. Well, sometimes when prophecy is prophesying something, it will sort of meld those two together and doesn't clearly distinguish between the different events. And so it can get, frankly, quite confusing. Probably the most well-known of this is Isaiah 7. In this passage, Isaiah gives King Hezekiah, if I remember right, the prophecy here. Not Hezekiah. I just lost his name. Anyway, and what happens in the verses is, at the time, Israel is threatened by Samaria and Syria. And they're scared of this. And God says, I'm going to take care of you. And the king says, and God says, I will give you a sign, a miracle to prove I'm going to take care of you. Don't go try to make an alliance to fight off these guys. And the king says, no, I don't want a sign from you because I want to do my own thing. And so God says then, therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, shall call his name Emmanuel. That's a prophecy of Christ. He shall eat curds and honey when he knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good. That's a phrase that ties scholars in knots. They're not sure what to do with that one. So we'll move on. For before the boy knows how to refuse the evil and choose the good, the land whose two kings you dread will be deserted. That's a prophecy of the coming fall of Samaria and Syria. Okay? So in one prophecy, God is bringing together his deliverance of Israel from political enemies and his spiritual deliverance of his people through Christ. So you have these two events, one of which pre-shadows another, and sometimes the prophecy will bring the two together. Does that make sense? It's not a way we're thinking. We like things like the cut and dried, and this is, we're on this topic, now we're moving to this topic. Script doesn't always do that. Another example is when Ezekiel, or Isaiah, talks about the king of Tyre as being high and lifted up and haughty and then brought down, then talks about walking in front of God and being cast down from heaven, and kind of brings the spiritual fact of the fall of Satan and the fall of this haughty, arrogant human king together and kind of merges them in a way it's hard to distinguish, but there's clearly two things going on there. So sometimes prophecy combines parallels in history in ways that it's emphasizing the parallel, but it can get challenging to untangle the connections. And so it can be quite confusing that way. Make sense? Any questions on that? Okay. Prophecy sometimes skip time. Okay? You have usually two events or two sort of an event in two stages. And this often happens with Jesus, his first coming and his second coming. And prophets often don't bother mentioning there's going to be a big gap between one coming and the second coming. And in fact, even when Jesus is preaching and he goes to the synagogue in Capernaum and they ask him to read the scripture and he opens the scroll, it says, and reads Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings to the poor. He sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And it says he closed the book and sat down and then taught from it. Well, the problem, the passage goes on, the year of the Lord's favor and the day of the vengeance of our God. But the day of the vengeance of our God refers to Jesus' second coming. His first coming was not for vengeance. So he reads the part of the passage that applies to his first coming and stops. Isaiah doesn't explain, hey, this is two separate events. He's summarizing Jesus' coming, the two comings, which are really are kind of stage one and stage two of God's plan for history. And he summarizes them, brings them together, which, again, can be confusing. Can be illustrated pretty well from the Nebuchadnezzar's dream in Daniel. In Daniel, we are familiar with that pretty well, the idol, the statue anyway. We always assume it was a statue of Nebuchadnezzar himself, but we don't know what it was a statue of for sure. But you have the head of gold, and he has a dream. He dreams the head of gold, the arms and the breastplate of silver, and then the loins, the thigh, the waist, the thighs of bronze, and the legs and feet of bronze and, I'm sorry, of iron and clay. Technically, the legs are iron, the feet are iron and clay. So, and he explains us four world powers throughout history. There's going to be four world powers. And he says, you Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of gold. After you will come another kingdom of silver. It'll be not be as fine as yours. And then the kingdom of brass. And then as we go through history and putting this together with a further vision of the beasts and so on, gives more details, we find that we have the Babylonian Empire, we have the Persian Empire, the Greek Empire, and the Roman Empire. Right? That's pretty basic. What does the dream indicate happens after that? Right. There's a rock. It says it's hewn without human hands, comes, crushes the statue, and grows to fill the whole earth. That's Christ's kingdom, destroying the kingdoms and filling the whole earth. What's wrong? What's the problem there? The Roman Empire has been over for a long, long time. And it sounds like he should have come and set up after the Roman Empire is done. Why didn't Christ come? Well, it skips a gap of time. Prophecies do that sometimes. In fact, if we have the details right, Jesus referred to the times of the Gentiles. Jerusalem will be trodden down until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So it looks to me like is basically Daniel is giving the history of Israel, the kingdoms that will control Israel, the major kingdoms. There are other smaller ones that fought back and forth, but the big major kingdoms that control, or empires actually, that control Israel. Well, once Israel is not a nation, this prophecy isn't really about that time. And so you have a gap, a couple thousand year gap nearly, in this that doesn't really apply. It doesn't know what it's about. And so you have this huge gap of history that's not contained in this vision. Does that make sense? It's not that he got it wrong. It's just this, there's details he didn't give because he's not trying to give all the details. So some of these prophecies skip time. Any other thoughts, questions on that? Does that make sense? Prophecies use symbols, use images. Typically, prophets use symbols when they want to emphasize something, emphasize a quality. And so Daniel gives a prophecy of the different beasts that represent the same kingdoms he'd already talked about. But there, it gives a lot more detail with the bear being strong and actually eating three ribs, which referred to the kingdoms that it conquered. You have there the eagle that just an eagle, but there's speed. I'm the leopard. I'm thinking of for speed. the leopard that in Alexander the Great, the Greece was so fast in their conquering and so on. You have a lot of symbolism going on to emphasize a quality, to create a setting, to summarize details. We mentioned before Revelation 12, the woman clothed in the sun with the standing on the moon, a moon under her feet and the stars in her as a diadem. What's it going on there? He's not saying this is literally a woman wearing the sun and stars. It's emphasizing the glory of this, of God's chosen people. And there's debate, is that Mary? Is that Israel? Probably both, right? I don't think God's worried about that level of detail in that. But it emphasizes the glory of God's chosen people. And so the symbols sometimes simply emphasize a quality or create the setting. in Daniel here, he gives some of what the symbols mean, right? You, O Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of gold. You're the greatest kingdom, the riches, the quality. Silver, it says, the kingdom coming after you will not be as great as yours. Just like silver is not as valuable as gold. Doesn't tell us what the bronze means. There's probably a meaning to it. But if we're going to assign a meaning to the bronze, we have to be careful. Because now we're adding things and we're speculating. And that's okay as long as we realize we're speculating. All right? So he doesn't say what the bronze means. Maybe, you know, it's a lesser quality than silver. But it's stronger. Who knows? The feet, he says, iron, as iron is strong. And then the clay, he says, just like iron and clay won't cohere, won't hold together. So this last kingdom will not be, will partly be very strong and partly very weak. It'll be a divided kingdom with variety in it. So we're given some of the explanations, some of the symbols, not all of them. And so, and this is a simple one, all right? There's others with lots and lots of symbols going on, and we're left with very little explanation of what they mean. And so we have to be careful not to overemphasize symbols. Prophecies give incomplete information, all right? I'll say prophecy is given in small doses. That's not always the case. But God doesn't sit down saying, I'm going to give all the details that's going to happen. He maybe came closer to that, actually, with the text we looked at this morning with Moses saying, okay, I'm going to send you to Egypt, and the king is not going to let you go, and I'm going to do it, and gives quite a lot of detail. But it doesn't usually work that way. He usually makes a point, and the point uses prophecy, but the point is not all about the details. And so it's hard to know what fits with what at times. If we're going to talk about the Antichrist, for example, we go to Daniel. He talked about the little horn that says, that speaks great things, that exalts itself above God and so on. There's other places, several places in Daniel talks about this world leader that's coming that will exalt himself above all gods and try to exalt him above God. We go to Revelation 13, talks about the beast that causes all the world to worship the beast. 2 Thessalonians 4, or 2 rather, about the man of sin who will come, who will be revealed. And I'm pretty sure all these fit together, all these talking about the same coming individual. But understand, we're bringing three different pieces together to get the picture. And we can't prove they fit together quite that way. So someone else will look at it and say, no, they don't fit that way. This is, you know, Revelation 13 is something totally different than 2 Thessalonians. And you can't prove it. So it's a matter of putting the pieces together, because there's no one spot that gives all the information. Here we go, for example, in the statue. The feet are iron and clay. Well, in other places, Daniel talks about a kingdom with 10 kings. And so I read numerous scholars who say, well, the 10 toes represent the 10 kings. Maybe. We're not told that. It fits nicely. I don't know. It could. So you see these things that fit really nicely together. And it's tempting to run with them. Okay, that's what that means, clearly. And it's okay to do that. But if we go too far that way, we start losing sight of the fact that God is in control. And what he's teaching us through this is that so on. His control, his the fact that he's going to bring vengeance. The fact that we need to live realizing this world is not the end. It's confusing because, frankly, sometimes it's just incomplete. And we have to put the pieces together. And we don't have a master picture to go by. Finally, I am convinced prophecy is clear in when it's fulfilled. We'll probably not get it all right ahead of time. And I left the probably in there just, you know, maybe someone does some at some point, but it's really unlikely. We're not going to get all the details right. No one had all the details right for Jesus' first coming. We're not going to have them all right for the second coming. We can put them together, get the best picture we can, but not trust our picture. We trust God as we walk through it. Number two, we'll recognize it when it happens. I believe that as prophecy is fulfilled, we go, ah, that's what that meant. One reason I'm a futurist, okay? I think most of Revelation is future. There are other views. Some say it's mostly done already. Is because no one agrees on what it means. Even those who hold that it all refers to history, they don't agree on what it means. Okay, if that prophecy is already fulfilled, God did a poor job of it because we're still trying to figure out what it was. So the fact that we're just all over the map on what these things mean, to me indicates, okay, it hasn't happened yet. Because it seems to me that prophecy, when it's fulfilled, becomes clear. Couple places, and I understand these are referring to specific things, so it's not giving a general statement, but a couple examples of this. Jesus says to his disciples coming down toward the cross, toward the end of his ministry, he says, the Son of Man will be taken, will be killed, will be persecuted by the high priests and the leaders, and will be put to death, will rise the third day. And he says, I'm telling you this now, before it takes place, so that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. So he gives a prophecy of what's going to happen and says, now the reason I'm telling you this is so when it happens, you'll understand it and recognize it. I'm not giving it to you so you understand all the details coming up. It's so that when it happens, it'll make sense. I think, and again, this is one of the more obscure passages in Revelation 13, speaking of the beast, which I understand to be Antichrist, he says this calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, 666. Now, we have tied ourselves in knots through history over that number, and I don't like the number either. It's creepy, all right? Route 666, there's actually a Route 666 here in America that supposedly has a higher number of accidents. I don't know. I'm not convinced there's anything about that number itself. I had a roommate once that we shared bills. Never do that if they're in your name, by the way. But we did. I made that mistake. One time, his part of the bills for the month came up to $666 in some sense. So I wrote it on our board. He came and erased it and put $667 because he didn't like that number. All right. The number is not bad in itself. And my understanding of what this is saying is, basically, when you're at this point in history, you'll recognize him by this number. Doesn't give details of how. Doesn't give this number as a way to search for Antichrist if you find something that fits this number. That's not the point. The point is, when you're living in those times, when Antichrist is revealed, this is a way you can recognize him at that point. So again, I think this means, hey, when you're there, you'll get it, right? Beforehand, probably not. But once you're there, you'll understand what this means. It's clear in hindsight. One more time. Let's jump back to the statue. The Roman Empire was strong. It had an army. It was central government. It was a strong empire. We're not sure what the clay and the iron exactly refers to. All right? So in my mind, That's probably because it hasn't happened yet. The gap in this history comes, if you want to put it, between the at the ankles. All right, we're at the ankles right now, if I understand this correctly. Because the legs are the Roman Empire, the feet are this coming empire that is really loose, strong and weak together. How does what exactly does that mean? We'll figure it out. When it happens, we'll recognize it. Probably has not happened yet. Clarity comes at fulfillment. It's understood in hindsight. So prophecy is confusing, absolutely. But as we walk that way, it's a lot of fun to look at. It's a lot of fun to look it over and say, hey, this is happening in history. And the Bible says this, so that looks like it's coming together. All right, but we have to be careful with that. Let's just be honest. There's a few things we can say pretty certainly, yeah, that's fulfilled prophecy. A few things in history, recent history, the nation of Israel for one, coming back to be a nation. God predicted things that would happen to Israel that had not happened. And so Israel had to become a nation again for those things to be fulfilled. Does that make sense? So yeah, that's clearly setting up for fulfilled history, fulfilled prophecy. There's prophecies of what's going to happen in the temple. There is no temple right now. So for that to be fulfilled, there has to be a temple again. Some things. So I believe the temple will be rebuilt at some point. When that happens, yeah, we can say, yeah, that's history happening. But we had to be careful. As we're looking at this, getting interested, looking it over, and if it's interesting to you, great. If not, trust God anyway. The focus we have to keep as Christians is, number one, prophecy tells us to trust God. He's in control. He has a plan. Number two, it's not on the screen, but prophecy tells us over and over, one lesson brought from prophecy is, in Peter's words, what sort of people should you be since these things are going to happen? So we recognize that we have a responsibility to live a certain way today. That stuff is clear. The unclarity we can have fun with, we can look into, we can discuss, we can learn from. But what's clear is we trust God and stay with Him and live as He wants us to in the meantime. Any final thoughts, questions, clarifications, disagreements? That's okay too. All right. Well, let's be dismissed. If any of you want the slides, I'm happy to give them to you. I have them as pictures or as PowerPoint, so you're welcome to those if you would like.